Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 30th day of July, 2020, Thursday. Yes, Thursday. Almost Friday. Can't it just be Friday already? I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host, appropriately named and appropriately attired for a podcast, which means I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt. Hey, Quinn, come here. Come here.
No, I don't want to talk.
You don't want to talk? Just say hi to everybody.
No, let me go find Bailey.
All right. She's letting all the emails say, I love it when Quinn is on. Go to her head. So we got an action-packed show today, as we always do. It's such a crazy. We've got some of the most ridiculous reporting I've ever heard from a senior. Senior citizen and a senior reporter from NBC News about that garbage hearing yesterday. Such a complete and total damn joke. We'll get into that. I've also got a hilarious montage about the mask debate. Yes, do you mask debate? If it sounds like I'm trying to say something I'm not actually saying, you're on to what the joke is, but you'd think somebody in the editing process would have noticed this. Plus a whole bunch of other insanity that is going on in the world because the world is insane. But first, a word from our sponsor, AncientLifeOil.com, and the great CBD oil that they sell. What is CBD oil? Most people are asking themselves that because they hear about it all the time. Well, it really is sort of a bit of a minor miracle for when it comes to dealing with pains, aches, and stress and anxiety. I wasn't a believer. I definitely was not a believer. But then I tried CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com, and I thought, whoa, my eye strain at the end of the day, gone. Knee pain, better. I'm able to sleep better and faster. It takes me a long time to fall asleep normally. That's why I recommend you go to AncientLifeOil.com. You check out their CBD oils. You choose your flavor. You choose your strength. You throw it in the cart. You enter promo code Derek at checkout, D-E-R-E-K. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of everything else. Talk to your friends. Talk to your family. I guarantee you know somebody who is taking CBD oil who will vouch for its effectiveness. And then you say, well, if I'm going to give it a shot, I'm only going to go with the best. And that's at AncientLifeOil.com. Promo code Derek for free shipping. All right, there you go. Shipping saved. Now on to the news of the day. Before we talk about the tech hearing with the tech CEOs, I want to play something that Andrea Mitchell said at the open of her show yesterday. I didn't notice it until last night and I'd already recorded, but it is so typical MSNBC. During the opening of the Barr hearing yesterday, Jim Jordan played a video. It's a long video. It's about 8 minutes, 9 minutes long, highlighting things that a large swath of the American public likely hadn't seen before. That it was footage of the riots around the country. Since the media hasn't really covered it, has pretended it didn't exist, or they haven't covered it, but they've covered for it, that it was, oh my goodness, these horrible people on the right are just making up these stories of riots because these protests are so peaceful and so loving, and all they really are is socially distanced hugs, and that's it. Jim Jordan played highlights of a bunch of media morons saying, well, these are mostly peaceful while standing in front of burning buildings and things like that. But they also showed the violence against police, the violence trying to burn down the buildings, blinding federal officers, things like that with the green lasers. Well, that upset the left that this was shown, and they used one of their favorite tricks, and Andrea Mitchell exemplifies this. She used to be a respected journalist. God, what a fall from grace she has. I mean, I thought that her career took the biggest hit when they went from standard definition to high definition, but no, it's when they gave her own show on MSNBC and they allowed her to speak. She's the chief foreign correspondent who can't shut up about things domestic. You know, she'd be the chief domestic correspondent if she were an expert on domestic policy. But she opens her show denouncing Republicans and denouncing Jim Jordan for playing a heavily edited video. Now, first of all, no shit, dumbass. It's heavily edited because you can't show one ride from stem to stern. Also, Andrea Mitchell's show is heavily edited. The NBC Nightly Newscast, heavily edited. The 10-minute, 20-minute, half-an-hour, hour-long press conference is boiled down to a 28-second package by some airheaded liberal reading it off a teleprompter with maybe a 4-second clip involved. That, I would say, constitutes heavily edited. But the left, they believe that heavily edited is their own domain. Now, there's no real context needed for somebody throwing a Molotov cocktail or throwing a brick at a cop. There really isn't a context in which you go, oh, well, now that I see the larger scale of it, it makes perfect sense that somebody would throw a brick at a police officer or set a police car on fire. But that doesn't matter to Andrea Mitchell of NBC News. She's upset because their audiences were confused. They, for the first time, probably, have seen footage of what's really going on at night in cities like Seattle and Portland and Denver and Oakland and New York and Chicago, elsewhere. You name the major city controlled by Democrats for generations, and that's where it's happening. So she had to try and cover for it, because I think that even these dim-witted leftists would look at that and go, boy, I got to say something about that, because otherwise our audience is going to be wildly confused. That video conflicts, directly contradicts everything we've been saying to this point. You know, peaceful, loving, that the police are aggressive. Oh my goodness, they're going out and just beating people on the streets like, I don't know, they're members of Black Lives Matter or something. Actually, if they were doing that, they might not have a big problem with it, because that's what leftists do. They might not want the competition. So listen to how Andrea Mitchell opens up her show yesterday, keeping in mind the video from Jim Jordan and the fact that Democrats would not let the Attorney General of the United States speak.
Good day. I'm Andrea Mitchell in Washington. You have been watching a contentious hearing. Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee trying to grill Attorney General Bill Barr after more than a year of his refusing to appear before them with big issues like his characterization, they say inaccurate, of the Russia probe, the Mueller probe, his order of federal agents into Portland and Lafayette Square, and whether he's independent of political influence from President Trump. This after ranking Republican Jim Jordan showed a graphic, selectively edited, nearly 8-minute montage of protests from around the country, which he claimed were anything but peaceful, including sound bites from Democrats Biden and Obama. Clearly, very political and highly edited.
Highly edited, just like your face is, Andrea. Can you believe that? It was highly edited. Oh, heavily, heavily edited. Refute it. You can't refute it, so you just deny it. That's what the left does. That's a leftist tactic. You can't refute it, so you just deny it. Oh, it's not valid. There's no point in responding to that. They have no points to make. This is what the left does constantly. It's sort of the rhetorical version or the non-race version of you're a racist. Whenever a Democrat wants to just stop a debate because they can't handle it, they have no rebuttal. Well, you're a racist. Well, what? That you're not answering the point. How can we afford to pay for that? You're a racist. Well, all right, it's lovely talking with you, moron. And Andrea Mitchell's doing it's heavily edited. Was it factually inaccurate? Was it heavily edited? In what context, Andrea, is somebody throwing a brick taken out of, that if you put it back in that context, it would make perfect sense. Where does that fall on the spectrum of liberal idiocy? Well, you know, sure, you're showing them trying to blind federal officers with green lasers, but what you didn't show was how the federal officers were standing around minding their own business beforehand. Clearly a provocative move. So, you know, you take it out of that context and it gives it a whole different meaning, right? This is what these people believe. This is who these people are. If you are their opponent, you are their enemy. And if you are their enemy, no lie is too big. No fit of violence is too vile. There is literally nothing they will not do to win, to destroy, to harm you. They are, and I know I keep going back to this word, but it's only because it's appropriate. They are disgusting human beings. That she would open her show that way tells you everything you need to know about Andrea Mitchell as a human being, if you can call her a human being. Oh, by the way, at the end of the program today, I have some video or some audio that's actually really funny that you will enjoy. And so if I like grouse and moan and get angry during the rest of the show, know that there is a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Okay. I wanted to highlight that because this is, you know, Andrea Mitchell is, whenever she's referred to in reverent tones. Oh, Andrea Mitchell, because she's so old. She's been doing the job forever. You would think that somebody who had been around back before bias was acceptable currency in circles of journalism would notice that in the circle jerks of journalism, now bias is the coin of the realm, and it's probably not a good thing for the profession. But you'd be wrong. You'd be wrong. Let's get into the tech hearing briefly, because there is a lot of other things. I've got a bunch of audio for the tech hearing, but I've got other things that don't have audio, so we'll play the audio at the beginning. I just want to highlight a couple of the things that Republicans were. It's a weird hearing because you had the CEOs of Apple and Amazon and Google and Facebook up there, when realistically, yes, the left hates Apple, the left hates Amazon, which is funny because Jeff Bezos owns one of their favorite birdcage liners in the Washington Post. But they hate rich people so much that they hate Jeff Bezos. The right has a problem with social media. Google, there's issues with Google. There are some issues with Facebook, but not nearly as many. The real problem is silencing conservatives on Twitter. And Jack Dorsey was not there yesterday. I don't know why. He might have refused. To hell with it. I wouldn't testify before these people if I didn't have to. But he wasn't there. It was just kind of weird. Especially if I were a billionaire, I'd be like, screw you guys. I'm going to the beach. And you guys can go to hell. I'll send one of my flying monkeys to get you. Because Jack Dorsey knows what's coming. He knows what his company is doing. He knows that they are incredibly, incredibly biased. Not that Google isn't. Google is probably worse, but Twitter gets more attention. Google is much, much worse when it comes to the freedom of this country, the essence of this country. The Google employees are amongst the most woke, and they're encouraged by their leadership. If you remember, after the 2016 election, Breitbart got its hands on some video of Google employees and CEO and all the big muckety-mucks on up the food chain having a staff meeting and whining and crying and like going, oh my God, what happened when Donald Trump won? And more importantly to them, Hillary Clinton lost. So there's no question whatsoever about Google's biases. And Google had sworn internally through leaked emails that they will make sure that that does not happen again. And they'd already skewed results to search results to help Hillary Clinton in 2016. And they're going to redouble their efforts to skew search results for 2020. Just don't expect to find the truth on Google. They say, well, we're just a portal and it's just potluck what comes up. Bullshit. Go to Bing, go to DuckDuckGo, go to anything. Yahoo still exists, I think. I don't know. I remember AltaVista and Excite. I don't know if they still exist. But anyway, don't use Google. I know I use Gmail for my email, but there's like two ads on it, and I never click on them. So they don't get anything out of me. Congressman Ken Buck ripped into Google because not only do they despise this country, they dropped Pentagon contracts, for example, because their employees said, well, you shouldn't be working with the Pentagon, the military. Don't you realize Donald Trump is president? And it's really, I question the patriotism of anybody whose patriotism is dependent upon the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I'm old-fashioned that way. If your patriotism, if your love of the country is dependent upon who the president is, if you go, oh, I love this president, this one's not my president. I don't like this president. I hate the Pentagon, hate the police, hate the this, hate the... Oh, look, it's my president again. Oh, I love this president and everything about this country. If you're not a patriot, if you're a fair-weather patriot. Ken Buck ripped into Google about refusing to work with the United States military while working with the Chinese Communist government and military. This is a story that I don't think most people know. Most people don't realize that when you go, I'm going to go do a Google search on this, a Google search on that, and all the ads you see served up on websites, you know, the things that don't, that look really weird, those are mostly a huge, it's a monopoly. A huge percentage of those ads are served up by Google. And while the websites get paid, because a lot of times leftists have blocked other companies, here's a thought experiment if you ever do it. If you go to a website like Vox, V-O-X, or Slate, or Huffington Post, or whatever, just take a look around at the ads. And you'll see a lot of ads for, ooh, the new Lincoln car is out there, or whatever it is. Pharmaceutical companies advertising there. And then go to a conservative website and take a look at the ads. Those liberal websites can sell ads directly to those companies because, well, there'll be, the liberals will be the ones who are the Nazis who demand that they not buy ads on conservative websites. So you get a different type of ad and a different value of ads. The Huffington Post and Vox, they can charge more. They believe that their audience is a more desirable demographic, even though they're, you know, they're 25-year-old unemployed losers who spend their day masturbating to pictures of Katy Perry or something like that. They con, just like it's more expensive to buy an ad on CNN than it is to buy an ad on Fox. Fox has three times the audience than CNN does, but the demographers have insisted that, well, Fox has more numbers, but they're high school graduates or dropouts, whereas CNN's audience is successful, moneyed city dwellers that have disposable income. If you ever wondered why the ads are different on those things, that's why the ad buyers have a bias against Fox. Fox still makes way more money because Fox can command much higher carriage fees on cable systems. See, this is probably going into the weeds, but I don't care. Most of the channels you see on cable television, you say, oh, by tier one, tier two, tier three. Tier three has a whole bunch of channels. The channels that you see offered in all of those tiers are the channels that most people want. And they could put a couple into the other tiers to try and entice you to get them. Like, oh, I kind of want this channel too. It's only $5 more a month. What the hell? Well, you think, well, $5, that's not a whole lot to go to a cable channel. Imagine that times 330 million people, and you begin to see that it starts real money, plus every month. Some channels offer themselves to cable providers for free. Please take us out there. Please take us, and they pick and choose what they want. Others have to be a part of it, or people wouldn't subscribe. Fox News is one of them that has to be a part of it because people wouldn't subscribe. CNN, to a lesser degree, is the same way. When you see cable anywhere, you expect them to have both of those channels and MSNBC and what have you. Well, C-SPAN or CNN has some leverage in that they can charge cable companies to carry their channel, whereas other smaller channels, less popular channels, have to sometimes pay to get the cable company to pay to carry them. Sometimes they cut deals with other channels and you carry us and you carry them and whatever, but that's too far into the weeds. Fox is the same way. Cable companies have to pay for Fox to be on it. That's pay a lot. So most of Fox's revenue does not come from advertising. That's why advertising boycotts don't really work when it comes to Fox. The left, the flying monkey army over at the cocaine-soaked Media Matters for America headquarters, they think that, we got another sponsor to go. Yeah, it costs them a little bit of money, but not nearly enough to make a difference because they get so much money from the carriage fees that they command from cable companies to be included on their systems, because they recognize that if they don't carry them, their competitors will, and they'll lose a lot of customers to their competitors. That's how Fox now ends up on all of the cable channels everywhere. Anyway, that's a long tangent there that you might find interesting. What is interesting is how Congressman Ken Buck rips into Google about their... Anyway, Google is too powerful. I was making a point about advertising dollars. It's long since lost. Let's get to Congressman Ken Buck ripping into Google about their refusal to work with the United States military, but their ease at working with the Chinese government.
Google's stated reason for removing itself from the bidding process is that the U.S. military's project did not align with Google's corporate values and principles. This is the same U.S. military that fights for our freedoms and stands as a force for good across the globe. These are the same soldiers, sailors, and airmen that sacrifice their lives to ensure you have the freedom to build your company and set your corporate policies without fear of government interference, unlike in communist China. I also find it very interesting that only months after making this decision to withdraw from the JEDI contract, Marine General Joseph Dunford, the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, warned the Senate Armed Forces Committee that the Chinese military was directly benefiting from Google's work. It made me wonder what values Google and communist Red China had in common. I asked myself, self, is it that the Chinese Communist Party imprisons Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps, like it is shown on the chart behind me? Could it be that China forces slaves to work in sweatshops? Maybe they align on the design to suppress free speech in Hong Kong. Did Google agree with CCP's decision to lie to the world about the COVID-19 pandemic? Then I thought about Google's Dragonfly experiment. I wondered if perhaps you agreed with the Chinese government's use of technology platforms to spy on its own people and enforce draconian security laws. Maybe it's that your company is aligned with the Chinese Communist Party's corporate espionage policies, where the strategy is to steal whatever can't be produced domestically. These values that allow Google to work with the Chinese military but not the U.S. military help explain why Google wouldn't think twice about blatantly stealing a competitor's product, right down to the watermark, without any hint of attribution.
He then goes on to talk about Google stealing lyrics from other websites, and they hid watermarks in them to prove that Google was doing it, and Google sure as hell was, because Google is above the law. But they won't work with the U.S. military, but they will work with the Chi-Coms. Why? Because life is about priorities. You choose your priorities. Your priorities show what your priorities are, what you favor, where you fall, and that Google is siding with the Chinese government, that Google employees are saying, do not work with the Pentagon. It is unethical to work with the U.S. military. But the Chinese military, sure, yeah, what the hell, let's do it. It's sick. It makes me never want to use Google ever again. I want to play something that, because one of the things that Republicans kept going back to is to highlight the shadow banning, the outright banning, the assault on conservatives. And I want to play this clip from Congressman Jim Jordan, because Jim Jordan's always enjoyable to listen to. And Jim Jordan is dead right on this. And the way that these social media platforms and these websites do just that. It's not, you know, you're not, it. Anyway, he puts it better than I will.
I'll just cut to the chase. Big tech's out to get conservatives. That's not a suspicion. That's not a hunch. That's a fact. July 20th, 2020, Google removes the homepages of Breitbart and the Daily Caller. Just last night, we learned Google has censored Breitbart so much traffic has declined 99%. June 16th, 2020, Google threatens to demonetize and ban the Federalist. April 19th, 2020, Google and YouTube announce a policy censoring the content that conflicts with recommendations of the World Health Organization. Now think about that. The World Health Organization, the organization that lied to us, the organization that shielded for China. And if you contradict something they say, they can say whatever they want. They can lie for China. They can shield for China. You say something against them, you get censored. June 29, 2020, Amazon bans President Trump's account on Twitch after he raises concerns about defunding the police. June 4, 2020, Amazon bans a book critical of the coronavirus lockdowns written by a conservative commentator. May 27, 2020, Amazon Smile won't let you give to the Family Research Council and the Alliance Defense Fund, but you can give to Planned Parenthood. Facebook, June 19, 2020, takes down posts from President Trump's reelection campaign. November 1, 2018, Facebook silences a pro-life organization's advertisement. May 19, 2016, former Facebook employees admit Facebook routinely suppresses conservative views. And I haven't even mentioned Twitter, who we actually invited, Mr. Chairman. We asked for you guys to invite him as one of our witnesses. You guys said no. I haven't even mentioned them. 2 years ago, they shadow banned two members of this committee. Four members of Congress were shadow banned 2 years ago, 435 in the House, 100 in the Senate, 535, only four, Yates, Meadows, Nunes, Jordan, only four get shadow banned. And of course, what did Mr. Dorsey tell us? He said, oh, it was just a glitch in our algorithm. I asked him, what'd you put in the algorithm? The names Gates, Meadows, Nunes, Jordan? I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I heard it was just a glitch, I wouldn't be as wealthy as our witnesses, but I'd be doing all right. We've heard that excuse time and time again. May 28, Twitter censors President Trump's tweet on the riots in Minneapolis. May 29, 2020, Twitter censors the White House for quoting the president's comments about the riots in Minneapolis. June 23, 2020, Twitter censors the president again for saying he'll enforce the rule of law against any autonomous zone in Washington, D.C. You can tweet all you want about the autonomous zone that happened in Seattle, but the president tweets that he's not going to have one in Washington, D.C. Nope, can't do that. You get banned, you get censored. Dozens of examples. Oh, I forgot one. Just last week, July 21st, here's what Twitter did. The leader of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, this is from the largest state sponsor of terrorism. Twitter allows this tweet, quote, "The Islamic Republic of Iran will never forget the martyrdom of Soleimani and will definitely strike a reciprocal blow in the United States." So you can threaten the citizens of this great country, the leader of the largest state sponsor of terrorism, that's just fine. But oh, the president says he's not going to allow some autonomous zone in D.C. and he gets censored. All kinds of examples, most of them from this year. And that's what's I think critical for us all to understand. Most of them from this year, an election year. And that's what concerns me and so many Americans, because we saw what Google did in 2016. We all know about the email the day after the election where top executives at Google email chain where they talked about the silent donation Google made to the Clinton campaign. Now, thank goodness it wasn't enough. And in spite of their efforts to help Clinton, President Trump won. But we're 97 days before an election. And the power, as the previous chairman and ranking member have said, the power these companies have to impact what happens during an election, what American citizens get to see prior to their voting, is pretty darn important. That's why this committee hearing is important. Look, we all think the free market's great. We think competition's great. We love the fact that these are American companies. But what's not great is censoring people, censoring conservatives, and trying to impact elections. And if it doesn't end, there has to be consequences. There have to be consequences. That's what I'm concerned about, and I think what so many Americans are concerned about. So I look forward to hearing from our witnesses, Mr. Chairman.
The hearing sort of went on from there. And what was weird is the Democrats were both parties had complaints about the tech companies. They mostly hated, like I said, Democrats mostly hated Amazon and Apple because they're successful. and Republicans mostly hated on the social media companies and Google because they are censoring conservatives and hiding conservative search results and harming conservative websites and basically controlling what information people have to get to. But ultimately, what it boils down to is Republicans were mad that there is censorship happening. They're silencing people online. Whereas Democrats were mad that they weren't silencing more people for enough things online. Tells you really both where the parties are right now as political parties. And it's kind of frightening, kind of telling. Of course, over at CNN, the human potato, Brian Stelter, I swear to God, this guy is, he's just a menace to society. He's such a little weaselly coward. He really is. And he just faces zero challenges in life. He must have testicles that have collapsed in on themselves. They're so small. I mean, he's otherwise unemployable. Who the hell's going to hire Brian Stelter? So in many ways, he has to do his master's bidding over there at CNN, or else he could lose his job and then never get another one that doesn't involve asking, would you like fries with that? And he would eat all the fries because cannibal, or he'd be upset and protest because his own people are being turned into French fries, whatever the case is. He was on a panel discussion, and he made sure to point out to CNN's, he's really just a bipedal safe space for idiot leftists. That's what Brian Stelter is. He made sure that everybody knew that, according to Brian Stelter, all these complaints about conservatives being silenced by these tech companies, it's not real. It's not real. Don't worry, it's not real. It's not happening. It's just anecdotal evidence. I'll explain why that's hilarious after we listen to him make the claim.
And then there's this parallel track where you have some Republican lawmakers accusing these companies of anti-conservative bias and trying to get them to make certain commitments and promises. Let's just all remember, the claims about bias in tech platforms are anecdotal, not backed up by data or science. These are stories, not statistics, but we're probably going to hear more of that from the Republicans in the coming minutes.
Thank you, you ugly weeble. Oh, no, they're anecdotal. It's not backed up by science. Mr. Science, right? You look like a science experiment gone wrong, Brian. And you sound like a science experiment gone wrong. But just for fun, just to play his game, since Brian Stelter makes that claim and insists that this is ridiculous, it's just anecdotal. There is no bias on social media, he says. Let's get in the Wayback Machine and go back to August 18th of 2018. It was a different time. Brian Stelter was probably 40 pounds uglier now than he was then, but he weighed about the same. He was interviewing the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey. As you heard from Congressman Jim Jordan, a lot of the conservative complaints about social media bias on platforms were against Twitter. And you just heard the human potato insist that it's anecdotal, there's no evidence to back it up. Well, if you listen closely to this interview, conducted by the very same creature that just said that, with the CEO of Twitter, you will hear a very interesting admission through the pseudo-denials that Jack Dorsey tries to weave.
The president called you out for shadow banning. What is the truth around that idea?
So I think a lot of the statements behind the statement and the question behind the question is, look, shadow banning is a very widely defined term. There's not one single definition. So the definition that we found that seems to resonate with the most people is, not amplifying particular messages, or if someone puts out a tweet, hiding that tweet from everyone without that person who tweeted it knowing about it. So, but the real question behind the question is, are we doing something according to political ideology or viewpoints? And we are not, period. We do not look at content with regards to political viewpoint or ideology. We look at behavior. And we use that behavior as a signal to add to relevance. We need to constantly show that we are not adding our own bias, which I fully admit is more left-leaning. And I think it's important to articulate our bias and to share it with people so that people understand us. But we need to remove all bias from how we act and our policies.
Couple of things in there, aside from the direct admission that Twitter is a liberal company. He said that we need to remove all bias from how we act and our policies, which is an implicit admission that there is bias in the way they act and in their policies. You would not have to remove something that does not exist. You see how logic works? Of course, the human potato does not remember that interview. I can't blame him. If I were him, I wouldn't want to watch him on TV either. But it's very interesting that he was insistent. Look, there's no anecdotal. You had the freaking CEO of Twitter on your show admit there was bias. Admit they were a biased company. Of course, Brian Stelter didn't press him on anything, didn't offer up any examples, didn't try to get him to answer for anything directly, because the silencing of conservatives is something that CNN and Brian Stelter wholeheartedly agree with Twitter on. They have been involved in witch hunts. They have actively gotten people deplatformed whom they dislike and disagree with. Many people I disagree with and think are crazy, but I'd never actively tried to get anybody deplatformed like CNN does. They were all conservative. They were all right of center. By the way, you human, maybe he's not potato. Maybe he's excrement. Like I said yesterday about Jerry Nadler, maybe Brian Stelter isn't fat. Maybe he's just so full of shit that he's exploding from the inside. But to have Brian Stelter contradict something the CEO of Twitter said to him directly is hilarious. And I suspect will be mentioned on this week's Foul-Mouthed Week in Review, because it deserves to be sworn about. What a horrible person Brian Stelter is. But of course, he fits right in at CNN. But the anti-CNN, ladies and gentlemen, the Trump campaign has a special message and a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters, so be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you do not want to miss. This offer is going only to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K. Text that to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years and keep it away from people like Brian Stelter and CNN. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Okay, one last thing about the socials before we move on to more cheery subjects, funnier subjects, and insane subjects. There was a hearing about social media involving Twitter that took place over in Israel. And they brought up something that's relevant here to the United States, as Twitter is moving to censor the president of the United States, to bury the president's tweets, to obstruct the president's tweets, to fact check the president's tweets, to delete some of the president's tweets because they caused the pearl clutching class over at Twitter to clutch their pearls. They are allowing the Ayatollah of Iran to tweet genocidal threats to Israel. He can tweet whatever the hell he wants. You heard Jim Jordan, I think it was, talk about how the Iranian dictator can say that we're going to get revenge for Soleimani. Not a problem. That wasn't put behind even a warning behind on Twitter. Well, the answer from Twitter about why it is that you can make genocidal threats against Jews, but the president's tweets, who have not made genocidal threats against anybody, are so sensitive that they need protection, that the audience, the potential audience, needs protection from such thoughts is pretty damn chilling. Listen
to
it.
Just Arsen wanted a quick question. He's sitting around the table.
Sure, just a quick question. Hi, my name's Arsen Ostrovsky from the Israeli Jewish Congress, also a human rights lawyer. First of all, thank you very much, Ms. Patterson, for your participation here. I have a simple question. You have recently started flagging the tweets of President Trump. Why have you not flagged the tweets of Iran's Ayatollah Khamenei, who has literally called for the genocide of Israel and the Jewish people?
So, we have an approach to world leaders that presently say that direct interactions with fellow public figures, comments on political issues of the day, or foreign policy saber-rattling on military economic issues are generally not in violation of our
Federal rules. Calling for genocide is okay, but commenting
however,
on politics is not, just so we understand. I just want to fine-tune the question. Calling for genocide on Twitter is okay, but commenting on political situations in certain countries is not okay?
So if a world leader violates our rules, but it is a clear interest in keeping that up on the surface, we may place it behind a notice that provides some more context about the violation and allows people to click through if they wish to see that type of content. And that is what happened for the Trump tweet. That tweet was violating our policies regarding the glorification of violence based on the historical context of the last line of that tweet and the risk that it could possibly inspire harm and similar actions. And it, as it was in the interest of the public to keep that on the platform, we decided to keep it up, place it behind a notice, put the label on it, as you might say, to limit the interaction with it. But because it is of importance to have it remain so that the citizens can see what their political figures are commenting and hold them accountable for what they're saying online.
So that's important. I think that what's come up again through different examples is actually a sense of double standards. And I would implore Twitter and other online platforms to ensure, I think that that's your responsibility and that you have to be held to account for that, that there is no double standard.
You're talking about a double standard. We will kill all the Jews. The Jews, the state of Israel will be wiped off the face of the earth. That's fine. Nothing to see here. Moving on. Versus, we will not allow lawless zones to exist in Washington, D.C. Uh-oh. There's an implicit threat in there. The express threat against Jews, meh, no big deal. They're just Jews. I mean, come on. Who doesn't wake up in the morning with blood-curdling anger towards Jews? Am I right? Of course I'm right. That's how the left views the world. Also, I just wanted to show that this isn't just a problem in the United States. And the while the CEO of Twitter wouldn't show up on Capitol Hill yesterday, a representative from Twitter, sounds like she's from Ireland and because of tax reasons. Lovely how these leftists, they locate their businesses in places that give them tax breaks, isn't it? The representative over there in the UK and in the EU says, well, we treat things differently. Look, if you want to go after Jews and you're the Ayatollah, you're just a world leader expressing a pretty valid frustration with those stinking Jews. Am I right? Wait, I'm talking to Israel. Never mind. But anyway, at least it's not Trump, right? Right. We all agree on that one. Keep that in mind. Look, I'm all in favor of there being a competitor to Twitter, and that Parler thing is a fine idea. But you get all these big names going, and I've signed up for Parler, but you get all these big names going, oh, well, if you don't want to be censored, go over to Parler. Hey, come over to Parler. And then what do? They spend all their time on Twitter still. Like, okay, I get it. You've got an alternative. But the way to make that difference is to en masse, and maybe you have to financially incentivize people to do it, but especially, you know, some of the so-called more popular parlorers or whatever the hell they're called over there, you got to say, all right, we're going to pay you or give you stock or a stake in the company or something, but in exchange for that, you've got to go to Parler and not use Twitter. Because that's the only way it's going to work. If people sitting around, and I don't want to name any of these people because I'm friends with some of them, but you know who whines about it the most. They sit there and they say, well, you should leave Twitter and go over there. I'm like, well, then what the hell are you doing? If it's so great over there, what are you doing here? I'm doing both. Well, then why do I need to go over there? Well, because you might get banned one day. That's true. So people set up accounts and then they go back to where the action is. That's a problem. Now, they've got to miss you. They've got to go, hey, whatever happened to so-and-so and such and this contributor and this host and whatever. And you go, oh, wait, that's right. They've gone exclusively over to Parler. Maybe you keep your Twitter account active to once a day tweet out, hey, if you miss me, I'm over at Parler with a link. Because that's really the only way any of these websites work, is if you get into somebody's daily routine. Sounds weird, but it's true. It is. We're starting up the Daily Caller. I just wanted the website to exist. Of course, I didn't own the website. They owned the website. But they wanted to have a huge splash and a big story. They wanted to sort of replicate the way that Andrew Breitbart launched Big Government with the Acorn story. That didn't really work out. They had a story about strip clubs and the RNC, but it wasn't a huge story that kept people coming back. I think it's better to just exist and grow over time and then make a bigger deal out of it. Once you get the bugs worked out, once you get everything worked, once you get a reader base, then you start trying to draw more. And you do that through incentivizing other people to draw more people in. But if Parler is going to work, and I don't know how it's going to work. Twitter doesn't really work. I don't think Twitter's making any money either. But if Parler is really going to take a bite out of Twitter, it has to be the prominent people that caused people to sign up for Parler in the first place have to be exclusively there. That's it. Just exclusively there. So you sit there and you go, whatever happened to so-and-so? Oh, yeah, they're over there. Well, I'll open up another browser and I'll go look at that. And then those people have to be active and engaged and engage with their audience to draw in more people. That's the only way I see it working. Anyway, there's news out of Chicago. It's actually good news out of Chicago. Remember the mayor, Lori Lightfoot, Yoda? She really does look like a slightly taller Yoda with slightly smaller ears. She was all against, don't bring any feds here. No feds in Chicago. We don't need them. We don't want them. We got everything under control. Racism, racism, racism. And then a couple hours later, 15 people were shot at a funeral. It was just a mess and a massive embarrassment for her. So she said, okay, we'll take some fed help. The president offered whatever help you want. We want to cut down on crime. We want to save people's lives. After resisting that, which is a really bizarre thing to resist, Lori Lightfoot reluctantly accepted the president's help. Now we get this story out of the Chicago Tribune. Fruit from that tree. Headline, reputed leader of Black Disciples street gang among 23 arrested in federal drug takedown. What? Now, this is a developing story, and there'll be more details later, but the gist is here. This is a very short story. The reputed leader of the Black Disciples street gang was among 23 people arrested in federal gang takedown involving drug and weapons trafficking in Chicago's Inglewood neighborhood, records show. So right away, you've got this big thing. Now, why did the feds have to do this? Why could not the city of Chicago's police done this? Why wouldn't Lori Lightfoot have ordered this? Darnell McMiller, who goes by the street, this is my favorite of all, one of my favorite street names ever. Darnell McMiller, who goes by the street name Murder. Gee, how do you think he got that nickname? Who goes by the street name Murder, was charged with distribution of fentanyl-laced heroin to a cooperating individual last September in the 7,000 block of South Low Avenue, according to court records. McMiller of Chicago is described in the charges as the current leader of the Black Disciples. The Black Disciples is a street gang. Why they didn't arrest this guy back then, keep him in custody, I don't know. a national street gang founded in the city in the 1960s. Among the others swept up in the probe was John Ector, owner of the Southside nightclub B75, who was also charged with bank fraud for allegedly helping the gang launder drug proceeds. Also arrested was Shongo Collier, part owner of the popular chicken restaurant Wings Around the World on West 61st Street. Collier was charged with dealing fentanyl and other narcotics. A two-year investigation also resulted in several alleged gang members charged with unlawfully trafficking handguns. Lori Lightfoot just last week was going off about how all the guns in Chicago, they're coming in from other places, and these other places need to have massive, massive gun control, as if they were just being shipped in there or wandering in on their own. Turns out that the feds just swept up a bunch of the people that were involved in trafficking of those weapons. She should be exceedingly happy, but at least as of this time, she has not said anything. Several others previously convicted felons had been charged with unlawfully possessing firearms, including rifles and a shotgun, furnished to members of the Black Disciples, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. U.S. Attorney John Lausch, I don't know, Chicago FBI boss Emerson Bury, and blah, blah, blah. They're going to hold a press conference later on in the day. This is really big news and good news for the safety of the people of Chicago, because I suspect that good old murder and the boys might have committed some murders. You know, call me crazy, but I think that if your nickname is murder, you might have been involved in murders, especially if you're selling fentanyl-laced heroin and hanging around with a whole bunch of people who are trafficking in firearms. The Chicago PD did not do this. The feds did this, but I bet you, since the feds are now in Chicago for this very particular reason, that they were informed by the Chicago Police Department about good old murder and the gang. And then you really have to ask the question, why didn't you guys do it? And I suspect the answer has something to do with either we're too busy because of all the shootings and the rioting, or it has to do with the mayor saying this: if the guy falls in your lap, fine, but don't go out of your way. We don't want to put anybody in prison. I'm a good liberal. Whatever the case, a big victory for the people of Chicago that comes with undoubtedly no help from the city government. This one is, I just read this headline and I'm like, what in the hell? Now, we all know that teachers' unions are against reopening the schools. No more open. Don't open the schools. We need not until there's a complete vaccine, and then nobody ever, ever, ever comes down with COVID-19 ever again should we open the schools. That seems to be, I mean, that's the attitude of people, a lot of people who are still getting a paycheck and will continue to get a paycheck no matter what. But this is a little bit different. New York Times headline: teachers wary of returning to class and online instruction, too. Unions are threatening to strike if classrooms reopen, but are also pushing to limit live remote teaching. Their demands will shape pandemic education. They don't have to. They could just tell all the teachers' unions to go to hell. And if you teachers really want to continue having a job, you'll teach, either in person or remotely. As the nation heads towards a chaotic back-to-school season, with officials struggling over when to reopen classrooms and how to engage children online, teachers' unions are playing a powerful role in determining the shape of public education as the pandemic continues to rage. Notice how it's powerful role, not helpful role. Teachers in many districts are fighting for longer school closures, stronger safety requirements, and limits on what they are required to do in virtual classrooms. Limits on what? Are they trying to get you to do a striptease? Are you going to pull a Willy Falal and Mary Kay Letourneau? And you're like, no, I don't want to do that, or no, I want to be able to do that? While flooding social media and state capitals with their concerns and threatening to walk off their jobs if key demands are not met, there's a simple solution. You're fired. Congratulations. You've now got more free time to spend with your family. On Tuesday, the nation's second largest teachers union raised stakes dramatically by authorizing its local and state chapters to strike if their districts don't take sufficient precautions, such as requiring masks and updating ventilation systems before reopening classrooms. Already, teachers unions have sued Florida's governor over the state's effort to require schools to offer in-person instruction. But even as unions exert their influence over Democrats, they face enormous public and political pressure because of widespread acknowledgement that getting parents back to work requires functioning school systems, and that remote learning failed many children this spring, deepening achievement gaps by race and income. It's by income. Okay, can we just stop with this race bullshit? A rich black kid with really good computers and parents who care is doing a hell of a lot better than a white kid with dial-up in Appalachia. Didn't do anything with race. It has to do with socioeconomics. The left is obsessed with race. With the academic year set to begin next month in the country, parents are desperate for teachers to provide more interactive face-to-face instruction this fall, both online and, where safe, in person. But many unions, while concerned about the safety of classrooms, are also fighting to limit the amount of time that teachers are required to be on video over the course of the day. How about as long as you're supposed to be in school? Can we just agree on that? Is that going to be controversial? The unions are, quote, really on the backs of their heels on this, said Robin Lake, director of the Center for Reinventing Public Education, a research and advocacy group that sometimes takes positions contrary to unions, sometimes. She is concerned at the urgent needs of children who have not physically attended school for many months are getting lost. Quote, I feel like we are treating kids as pawns in this game. Oh, welcome to the club. Pressure from President Trump, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they don't want to go back to school, and they want to work less from home. Some critics see teachers' unions trying to have it both ways, reluctant to return to classrooms, but also resistant in some districts to providing a full day of remote school via tools like live video, the kind of interactive online instruction that many parents say their children need after watching them flounder in the spring. I don't want to, look, 8-hour workday, that's crazy. I want to start stuff at noon, and I definitely want to be over by 2, because that's when my stories start. Union, yes. Yes, this is the union. It's kind of telling, isn't it? I don't want to go in, and I don't want to put in a full day's work. Can we agree on both of those demands? Then I shall do the bare minimum required of my job. Union, yes. They'll get away with this. Because the major school districts in Democrat-controlled cities will cave to it, and they'll set the tone. Hopefully there'll be some conservative mayors and governors out there saying, no, no, you do this, you do your job, or you look for a new job. It's pretty simple. Right now, there are a lot of people who do real jobs, not that teaching isn't a real job, but do other jobs, who aren't able to do those jobs, but they're qualified to teach as well. So there is a possibility that they could go and become teachers. You know, those who can't do teach. It's usually meant as an insult against teachers, but there are a lot of people who can't do their other jobs, so maybe they'll go teach. They actually do the jobs, but now they can go and teach. That would be interesting. It would be weird having people who know what the hell they're doing in a classroom, wouldn't it? Lastly today, I want to play this for you because I think it's damn funny. I work in words. I love little slip-ups. I love little screw-ups. I love things that are unintentionally funny. And this, to me, is unintentionally funny. As the country, as we did with Chris DeGaulle on this show last week sometime, about debates. We had the great debate over masks. And the way that I just put it there, the great debate over masks, really doesn't It doesn't leave much to the imagination, doesn't leave anything to giggle about. It's just not funny. But if you say it's a great mask debate, and you say that enough, and you say that fast enough, we're going to mask debate, then it begins to get funny. So I don't know if these people, and these are all from various news stations, some cable, national, some local, but these are all uses of that childish phrase, because at heart, we're all children. And the way that it's not just that they use the word, but it's the word in the sentence and the way that they use it that I don't know. It may be, if you've ever seen the movie, I guess, Porky's, where the woman is like asked to page Michael Hunt. Is Mike Hunt in the parking lot? Has anybody seen Mike Hunt? And they're all dying laughing. I'm sure there are other examples of movies, but Porky's is the one that comes to mind because that was the first time I ever noticed it. It's funny because they don't realize that they're doing it, but I got to imagine the people who wrote the script and put it in the teleprompter at some point during this mask debate, this giant circle of mask debate, recognized what they were doing. Because some of these sentences are just so damned perfect and hilarious. I can't help but giggle as I listen to this.
This morning, as COVID cases mount across the country, the mask debate is intensifying.
People are very passionate on both sides of the great mask debate.
The partisan mask debate is heating up.
Mask debate's growing.
The president is trying to have us cover the mask debate.
CVS, Target, and Walgreens are getting in on the mask debate.
The mask debate now taking center stage at local restaurants.
It's 9 minutes after six now, and there's new video of a raging mask debate.
The mask debate in Georgia is getting ugly.
The great mask debate in West Virginia might soon be coming to an end.
This mask debate is far from over.
How many mask debates have you gotten into? Love to hear it.
The mask debate was taken to a whole nother level.
Bishop David Zubik tells Pittsburgh's Action News 4 he found himself in the middle of a mask debate.
And we'll dive deeper into this pet store mask debate.
So we're going to begin with this thing we're calling the great mask debate.
What you do in your home on your own time is your business. Yes, it's the 12-year-old boy in me. They said masturbate. Oh, man, they said masturbate. Yeah, some of those sentences are just, he found himself in the middle of a raging masturbate. Yeah, I bet he did. I bet he did. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Hope you enjoy this, too. The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. Be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. The offer is going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you got to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. Yes, please. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. That is all the time we have. The great mask debate must end or begin, depending on where you are. I just hope you enjoy the refractory period after. See, you could just say the raging debate over masks and you avoid it altogether. But I'm glad they didn't. And I'm glad you listened. Tomorrow on the program, we're talking to John Lott. That's right. More Guns, Less Crime. He's got a great new book out about guns and gun statistics and crime statistics. And there's nobody in the country that knows more about crime and crime statistics than John Lott. So you will want to listen to that as well. Thank you for listening to this. I'll see you tomorrow.
How many mask debates have you gotten into?